Hello, I'm Dr. Richard Friend. Taking control of and improving your health requires the most relevant and timely health information available. And University Medical Center is here to help with facts and advice about important health topics that you care about. We know that your health matters.
For this week's Health Matters Report, we're sitting down with Dr. John Burkhardt. Dr. Burkhardt is a clinical psychologist and provides psychotherapy and related care at University Medical Center in Northport. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine at the College of Community Health Sciences. Today, we're talking about mental health awareness. Mental Health Awareness Month is May. So I think my first question is, why is bringing awareness to mental health so important?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, but I think one of the things that when I started to kind of look some things up and, you know, find some other historical kind of things, it's been going on since like 1949. And so I'm always surprised at that because when we started this endeavor about 10 years ago since I came here, I didn't really realize it had gone on that long. So what that tells me is it's been on people's minds for a while. I think now we're just starting to get to a point where we actually start to talk about it a little bit more openly, which is really the whole idea of it, right? Because that's how people get care and treatment, is if people know, right? Doctor can't help you.
What are some coping skills that you recommend to help people dealing with mental health issues?
Sure. So I always kind of like to look at coping skills in two different things. I always think of mental ones. So then as more of like your meditation and things like that, maybe journaling. Gratitude journaling is like a really big one right now. There's a lot of literature on it showing the kind of positivity of how that can affect your day. And the way I always kind of look at that too is if you're either practicing gratitude journaling, which is basically you're writing down what you've been thankful for that day, right? Or you just are engaging in the practice of gratitude. Maybe you take a time either in the morning, midday, or afternoon, and you pick out three things that are going good for your day. Like I even make it as simple as like, if your coffee was really good that day, I mean, that's something to be grateful for, right? Because I think sometimes people want to overthink that. To me, I'm sure there's other people that like it for different reasons. I like it because I think as human beings, our brain is already set up to find out things that are bad in the world. Right? It's so easy for us to find it and remember it, whether it's even it's happened to ourselves. I think we don't do a good job of really remembering all the good things that happen either to us or other people or in the world, right? If you ask people to tell you stories, they could probably tell you like three or four bad ones compared to every one or two good ones. And so the practice of gratitude, I think, helps kind of retrain us to start to recognize those things. Because if not, they kind of like walk by us all the time and we miss them. And that's not something we want to do. So but it also has a lot of benefits to it, and they've kind of shown that. So that'd be like a mental one. Physical one, think about either like deep breathing. Meditation could be like a mix of both. Exercise could be a physical one. And what I often find is that people, they're either picking from one category or the other, or they have a bunch of coping skills that they have just from one category. And then after a while, they're not as sharp as they used to be. And so sometimes it's just a matter of like, well, you do a lot of behavioral things to help yourself cope. Why don't we try journaling or gratitude journaling or some kind of meditative practice, something like that, just to kind of give people some options. So that way you kind of have a variety of things you're trying to do. Because let's be honest, sometimes we need like a physical boost. Sometimes exercise is the best because I don't want to think about something, right? Exercise as simple as walking, because if I think about doing yoga and the practice of that, that's still some mental work to remember everything or even thinking. And so some just good old walking outside, what have you, works very well.
Let's move into work-life balance. I think it's something that's hard for a lot of people. Let's talk about why that's important.
Yeah, so work-life balance, I mean, that's a huge shift because, I mean, if you think about it, we're still trying to find it again with everybody coming through COVID. Right? Everybody who wanted to be home. And then unfortunately, we all got it in a way we didn't want to. And then now you have people that sometimes don't want to go back to work. And so then where is the balance? Because in the traditional model was like, I went to work and when I went home, I was away from work. But then if you start working from home and you've never done it before, will now work and home blend together into this one continuous thing. And I think sometimes, especially from, I've read some articles and seen some other folks talk about, the balance is finding out the times where you can work the best for you. You know, so they've even talked about this from people working from home. Like, let's just say the person's more of a night owl, right? So if they find something that kind of suits them, and then during the day they can do some of the other things that at nighttime they might not want to do. That kind of fits with it. Other times I think it's more of boundary setting for folks, especially when you do work from home. You kind of feel like you're always attached to your email and everything else. And so a very difficult thing is setting that boundary of, I'm not looking at it past 7 o'clock, right? And I understand that there's always going to be situations and work circumstances where people can say, well, that's really hard because this, this, and this. Yes, and I understand that. But ultimately, you know, you can't work 24/7, and you need to have some time in there for yourself to do whatever you want to do, but to also just kind of take a break and kind of getting out of the habit. I mean, sometimes when I work with people, I think email is my favorite example, because it's almost like we have it on our phones, iPads, laptops. We almost can't help it, right? Even if we want to put it down and we know we don't have to, we're still looking, we're still checking. I hear countless times about, oh, my boss sent me an email at 1:30 in the morning, so I feel like I have to respond. And I'm like, but you don't. Like, they made that choice. And if you have boundaries of, you know, if you want to write me an email at 2:30 in the morning, great. Don't expect me to respond until the next day when I come back in the office. Something reasonable. Right? Yeah. But then also looking at, like, what that balance, what that means to you, right? And trying to find a job that's around that. And what I mean by that is, like, time, things you want to do, how you can basically kind of take some enjoyment out of your work. I know that sounds kind of odd, because we all feel like we kind of work for the normal monetary purpose to live life. But I think a lot of people, and I don't care what kind of job you have, they like their job, right? I think they like it more when they can get a little bit more flexibility and control. I mean, that's the bigger one.
What about some advice you would give somebody who wants to have a conversation with their supervisor about setting those boundaries?
Oh. That's a tough one. You know, it always depends on the supervisor, right? My thing is I always kind of go in with examples of what's happened, but you have to make sure that you're not going in an accusatory type manner. And then also, how can I say this? You're going to have a couple of things that go on. So again, let's go back to the email example. That always seems to be a good one. Is, I understand you're doing this, but this is not an expectation. You know, however, I'm willing to do this, right? So you don't walk in there and say, hey, you can't keep emailing me all these times, but you can have a conversation of, I know you're doing this, but I will respond by this. So everybody's kind of talking on the same kind of wavelength, right? The hard one is if your boss starts to expect you to be sending off emails at 1:30 in the morning. But again, it's still an unreasonable expectation. And I think the hardest part for most people is actually being firm enough to set that boundary. You know, because no one likes conflict, right? Maybe that's a better way to look at it. You know, it's going to have some conflict to it. And that makes people uncomfortable, and that's also what makes them not do it. But then by not doing it, then all of a sudden you're still unhappy, right? But you can go through a little bit of conflict. It might be bad at first, but a lot of times with things like that, it ends up being much better than we think, right? Conflict in general. So that's always something to remember.
What about resources? What do you recommend for people that are struggling with mental health and they don't know what to do or who to reach out to, or know somebody who is struggling? What are your recommendations?
So, I mean, the internet is always one of the biggest ones, right? But I always think, especially for what we do here at UMC, your family doctor first, right? If you have a family doctor, you go and talk to them, and then they can be a good place to set you up with resources, whether it's seeing our social service department or making a referral to somebody in that traditional kind of manner where people think about that. Or they might even just have some numbers of some other local practitioners or even facilities in the area that can be helpful. The internet can be useful in the terms there's more online platforms. I've seen like three or four of them, you know, that are currently out there. I don't know their payment structures or how that works as far as memberships, but I would imagine that they're more, a little more readily accessible, you know, wait lists, things like that. But I would assume they might not take insurance, so I don't know how that kind of confuses everything. The other thing, though, too, is, you know, usually at work, I mean, we have, you know, here at the university, we have an employee assistance program, right? So they're a great resource to talk to and get connected with somebody, and then you'll be able to receive some treatment. And if you need further treatment, then their job is to kind of either continue the treatment or move you over to somebody that can. So there's lots of different ways that come up.
Is there anything else that you want to speak about concerning mental health awareness?
Yeah, I think one of the things is there's always this kind of theme of, you know, take a moment or let's talk about it, or two of the big ones that always come up. And I think those are big, right? I think if something's going on, you should do it, because your physical health and your mental health are tied together, and your mental health is just as important as your physical health, and it can affect your physical health. People with poor mental health, they can have difficulties with weight loss or gain, sleep, cardiovascular problems, immunity, or if your immune system gets a little lower. I mean, there's all kinds of things that is tied into your mental health, and we don't often pay enough attention to how that can play a role in just our daily life. So, you know, just taking the time. And even if you're like, you know, I had somebody today that was like, I'm not sure why I should be here because I think this is kind of bothering, but not. And then we kind of talked about it, and it was. And there were some other things kind of tied to it. And so all of a sudden the person's like, oh, okay, well, that's helpful. Because if anything, at least they know, like, in the future, if something's bothering me, this is how my body starts to kind of tell me what's going on, right? It might not always be this thing if you wake up one day and, oh, I'm depressed, I feel depressed, so I know I'm depressed. It could be, I'm spending more time at home. I'm spending more time at my home in my room. I'm eating less, but I'm not losing weight, but I'm gaining weight. But, oh, yeah, I'm kind of not sleeping. Or I think another one that kind of comes up is like my brain feels just kind of slow, right? Because then they think they have ADHD or something like that when it's not that. It's just a depression kind of slows us down. And then if you think about trying to learn new information or even pull up other information when things are going slower, it's more difficult. So these things all come up, and sometimes because we all deal with them as part of being a human being, we don't always necessarily say, oh, I'm having this must mean I'm depressed. And sometimes it's not. But sometimes when you get a bunch of them together, it is. Like even boredom was a good one. That's often an overlooked one that when we looked at COVID and when they were in quarantine, the Italians, they noticed that they had a lot more depression. And what they figured out, a researcher figured out, is because, yeah, they were in quarantine or lockdown, but they were bored. And so all of a sudden that was like a big contributor to, the more bored a person was, the more depression they had. And so I've always kind of learned that one, because that's always kind of like one of those sleeper ones that you don't think about. But if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, I'm just watching TV, I'm not enjoying the things I like, it's all kind of eh. Well, and somebody said, what do you feel? Oh, I'm just kind of bored. But a more fancy clinical term is you have anhedonia, which means you're not starting to enjoy the things you usually enjoy, right? So if it gets up to a certain level.
So if it gets to a certain level, it's important, I think, that people need to talk to somebody, someone who will actually reach out and understand those kinds of things and reassure them that they're not necessarily crazy, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because a lot of people say that, oh, you're probably going to think I'm crazy. I'm like, no, I think you're a human being that is living life. But I think because how we've always kind of talked about our mental health at time, that always makes people fearful that other people are going to say that, until you get in a room with others and like, oh yeah, that's happened to me. And then everybody's looking around going, oh, like, it's okay. Right. And it is okay.
This is very important information that you've shared with us today. Thank you, Dr. Burkhart.
Yeah, thank you.
To learn more from us about these and other important health topics, visit cchs.ua.edu. And for all your primary health care needs, visit University Medical Center, with locations in Tuscaloosa, Northport, Demopolis, Fayette, and Carrollton. Thanks for listening.